My brother was a coal miner. My husband was a coal miner. My son worked in a mine a short while. I have nephews that work in the mines. I have a great niece that is a coal miner 5 years. She's about 4 feet, eight, and wears size 3 shoe. She has to have her shoes tailor-made because her feet are so small, the safety shoes.
Yeah.
She's a good little worker. And she loves the coal mine. And the men respect her.
How old is she?
She's probably 25 or 26 now. But she said, you know, if you're going to work, you might as well work where you could make the money and where you were raised. And she's, her daddy was a coal miner. And then her grandfather was a coal miner. That's my sister's husband. And he was killed in a coal mine, too. With a slate fall, you know, a roof fall came in.
What was your dad's name?
My dad's name was Harry Thomas Wilson. And before he got married, he was in vaudeville. And they called him Diamond Dick, and he was very witty. And he loved to entertain people, and he loved people.
For heaven's sake. And your mother was?
And my mother was real down-to-earth person, a very good mother and homemaker.
And her name?
Was Nettie Mary Wilson.
Maiden name?
Her maiden name was Holt.
How many children?
And my mother didn't have any brothers or sisters. And so she was married when she was 15. And then when she was 18, she had her first child. And so she had 14 children. And I'm the 13th one. And I was a preemie baby. And I was born on December 7th. And so they put me, they didn't have incubators then, I don't believe. And if they did, why then my mother had all of her babies at home. So in those days they didn't go to the hospital. And they put me on an oven door in a shoebox. And that was the incubator for me until I was, you know, old enough to, for full time. And so then all of the neighbors were so kind, and they came and watched over me, kept a vigil day and night. And even the doctor, Dr. Tuckwiller, he's deceased now. In those days, they came to the home, and they cared about, really cared about you. So he kept a vigil on me, you know, every day and looked about me. And I developed pneumonia, and they put an onion poultice on my chest and watched me, and I went through a crisis, and I made it. And so all my mother's friends loved me so much, they wanted to name me. So I have 32 names, and they're not on my birth certificate, but they taught them to me when I was 3.
What are they?
Sarah Lee, Helen Josephine, Frieda Naomi, Maxie, Ninda, Esther Olive, Hattie Marie, Stella Rebecca, Icefriend Christina, Rachel Ramona, Martha Virginia, Wilson Kasnowski. I might have left some out. There's 16 double ones.
That's incredible.
And then 7 years later, my baby brother came along. Jack's his name. So there were 14 of us, and we learned to work and share and help each other. And that's how we got along. And I think big families are great because you had a lot of love in a family. And that's what's lacking today. And we all had chores to do from a very little person, very tiny, very young. And then we learned to be self-reliant and independent.
Did you grow up in a camp?
No. I grew up just in a little community. However, when my mother did move once, and it was down towards Morgantown, she kept boarders. She worked very hard. And my daddy was boss in the mines, a fire boss. And so they moved, and then later they moved back to the homestead. And it's still standing. And we didn't have water. We had well water, and we had a coal stove. But now it's remodeled. It's got a bathroom. It's got electric running water and all the things that my mom didn't have. And we all had our chores to do before we went to school. We had to get up. And we had to go pump the water, thaw the well if it was wintertime, pinch your little hands with the pump and hold the pump handle on. And then we had to go pick the coal. And we had to empty the ashes. And I think it's good when you're raised like that because you appreciate things as you're able to obtain different things through life. Why? I think you appreciate and know the value of something.
Mm-hmm. How did your dad go from vaudeville into the mines?
Well, then of course he was a Buckeye. He was born in Ohio, and then I guess he worked his way. Well, they have coal, you know, in across the river there from Wheeling. They have coal mines all through Ohio. So then he just worked his way, and like I said, he probably met different people that gave him leads, and then he just ended up in Marion County. And he boarded at my grandmother's. And so my grandmother and granddaddy thought he was a very fine person. So in those days, mostly, you would just get married then for a home. And so they just said, well, that will make you a good husband, Nettie. So she married him. But he always had itchy feet, though. You know, once you're used to entertaining people, why, you just, it's in your blood. And she was the lady that kept the home fires burning.
He was gone a lot.
He was gone a lot, and he had a store. Then later he had a grocery store. Then later he managed a hotel in Charleston, West Virginia. And she wouldn't travel everywhere with him because she had all of us children. And so then when he would come home, we would be so happy because she taught us always to love him and respect him because he was our father. Mm-hmm. And so then when he got old and she was ill with a heart condition and arthritis, then she was independent. She didn't want to leave her home. But he came and lived with us for 7 years. I took care of him, treated him very kindly, clean bed and good food, and even we cut his toenails and everything, made him comfortable because he was my father, and cared for him till his death, 7 years before he died. And then when my mom took ill after he died, she was ill before, but then when she became incapacitated, then we girls took turns going to the home and caring for her. She had a stroke, and so then she never even got a bed sore. We gave her such tender, loving care. And we always felt that, you know, just bringing us into the world was something. And she made many sacrifices, you know, to caring for us, that she left a lot, you know, for us to really, a lot of memories, and made us what we are.
Well, you gave her a lot of pleasure, too.
So, and we tried never to cause her trouble. Uh-huh. And a lot of times we were little and we'd say, my sister and I would say, let's play brownie and get up and make the fire and get the oats on and all that and get the toaster on top of the coal stove and make the breakfast and make her a cup of tea, and then we'll creep back into bed, and then the alarm will go off and she'll get up and everything will be done. So we did that quite often for her because we didn't have a lot of money to do things in other ways, you know. Then when spring would come, I'd be the first one in the woods to gather all the beautiful wildflowers and bring her bouquets of flowers, and that is love. So, and I have a lot of memories. I don't have either one of them today, but I just, you know, live on the good memories that I have.
Yeah. You mentioned something about singing with your dad?
Yeah, I said, my dad used to go around to all the rallies, you know, the when the mines had struck and when people were running for office in the UMWA. And then I'd get on a platform. Oh, I felt so proud, you know, going along with him, and I'd sing. Van Bittner will win the strikes. Let me see. As sure as the world goes round, Van Bittner will win the strike and the scabs will hit the pike, as sure as the world goes round. And everybody just applaud, you know. And so I've been really with the union, I'd say, since I was just a little tyke.
What other songs did you sing?
My daddy used to put me on his knee and sing a lot of songs to me that he sung in vaudeville, and then he would recite The Face on the Barroom Floor. Uh-huh. And he looked like Robert Q. Lewis that used to be on TV. He had curly hair, and he was real agile, and he was real witty, and he was a very brilliant man. Uh-huh. So, and my mama, she's the one who had the common sense. She had a lot of common sense, so
you
put them both together, and then some of my sisters, one of them became a school teacher, and she graduated from the, used to be, well, it's Fairmont State College now, but it was called the Fairmont Normal then. Mm-hmm. And almost all of us graduate from high school, so at least we, you know. And we really learned a lot because they taught reading, writing, arithmetic then. And I used to be in spelling contests, and I would stand up and I'd won a lot of spelling prizes. It's my grandson, Pete III, to college. He's taken up mining engineering.
Oh, great. Tell me more about the union rallies in those days. That was in the, was that in the 30s?
Let me see, wait a minute. Well, it was whenever the unions were formed, you know.
Uh-huh. Was there a lot of music sung at those?
Oh,
rallies?
Yes. There was a lot of music and guitar playing and fiddle playing. You know, they call it the violin. But the fiddle playing, and they'd do the hoedown and all that. Uh-huh. And they served food, and it was really nice. And
they'd
come from all over.
A lot of songs made about conditions of the mines or about the...
Well, about the issues of the day and about, you know, holding on to what we have and not giving in to the companies and that, you know, get out and make a garden and you can make it and can your food. And everybody helped each other a lot in those days, too. So that, well, a lot of them didn't have the electric bills to pay and all the utilities weren't that high then. So people managed pretty well. And then they weren't always used to just a whole lot, so they were just happy, not exactly in what they had, but they wanted to hold on to what they had, and then they wanted to at least fight, you know, to keep the union together and make it a strong union. And, because see, when the scabs, they beat you up and put you out of your houses and things like that, make you live in tents. And made it hard, and you'd go to a company store, and you would never draw nothing. Always be in the red.
Hello.
My husband and I, we've been in the red lots of times.
Over because of your organizing?
No, because of the work condition and all that. And then we go to store and write down what they want, and they'd mark off everything except when I was a little girl going with my daddy to the store. Okay. Then they would just let us have salt side and stuff like that. And if my mother hadn't made a garden, canned the green beans and all like that, say, well, we'd just been eating gravy and salt side. But she made biscuits, homemade bread, and apple butter and jellies, and we'd stir apple butter all day, we girls. And we would also peel the apples, too. So, see, we never had time to get in trouble. And I enjoyed those days because they were memorable, you know, and it made me strong.
When did you meet your husband?
Then, during summer, I would get jobs, you know, to buy my clothes for school. And I would some people. I went to church all the time. I'm a Methodist, you know, I'm Methodist. So I'd go to church, and then you'd go to the church legs and rallies, and you'd meet people from various towns. So then I met a lot of nice Christian people from Berwickville, and they loved me, and they'd ask me to come stay during the summer. And I would go and work, do their house cleaning, and wash their walls, clean windows, just everything, to get me enough clothes to help me to go to school next year for the fall term, you know, in the winter. And then every summer I did that. So then after I'd work, while they let me go and mingle, and, you know, the friends I met, and we'd go to the Ball Diamond down here at Berwickville. And my husband managed a softball girls team, and I met him. And so we girls, we all loved him because he was such a kind, gentle man and good, decent man. So we'd say, boy, if we ever get a husband, wouldn't we love to get one like Pete Kuznowski? And here I just fell in love with him. And he was just perfect in every way to me, a good husband, a good father, and a good friend. And he was like that with everyone. He was a good boy all through school, good to his mother. And so never a day goes by I don't think about him. I have good memories.
Mm, that's wonderful.
And that's something, you know, to treasure. So I guess that's why maybe I've never married, because I know what I had, but I really don't know what I would get, you know. Mm. So I just learned to adjust and try to make it, and I always feel that wherever I am, he and God are watching over me. Mm. And that gives you, you know, it's inspiring. It gives you courage. Yeah. And then I have two sons, and they have their families. And so then I always feel needed because they're close. We're a close family. And so I do what I can for them. Not exactly financially, but other ways, you know.
Yeah, sure. Did you tell me that your husband's family were immigrants?
Yeah, they were Polish, and they came from Poland, and they settled in Philadelphia. And he was born in Philadelphia. Then Mr. Kuznowski worked in his shipyards, and he got his finger cut off there. Then later he came to the coal fields, and they came to number 9. And his wife kept boarders, and they had ducks and a cow and chickens.
They have a lot of kids in their family?
They only had 3 sons. They had one daughter, and she died. Then they had Eddie. He was the oldest. He's deceased now. Then they had Frankie. He was the middle one, and then Pete was the baby. Peter Joseph's his name. And then he got killed in number 9 on November 20th, 1968. And I always noticed when I was dating him how kind he was to his parents. And I thought, gee, you know, he would make a wonderful husband. And he was just that. So,
how many years did he work in?
He worked 45 years. He was 14 years old when he went into coal mines. 45 years. And he was working when he was trapped and killed. And he's never been recovered.
Is that
he's
right?
18 others besides Pete, which is 19. And we battled the company for so many years, wanting to recover them and find out what killed them so there wouldn't be a repetition, you know. But they were for 8 years. Well, we're still battling them, really. But they did seal the mine. And they said they would never mine coal in that area where they were, but I don't know. You know, they put us through a lot of battles. It's like a long war. Put us through a lot of battles. And I'm sure that if the men today would realize what battles that we went through, they would just fight stronger for their union, stand up for their union, stand up for their benefits and their rights, their human dignity, and be courageous, because we opened the doors for so many people for what is right and what you should do. We did it in a constructive way. but they just, after your husband is gone and they're of no value to the company, they care less for the families or the widows. They want you to be second-class citizens, but we're never a second-class citizen. Never. Never. So we fought for the Coal Mine Health and Safety Bill, and I have one of the pens that the President Nixon signed the bill into law. I was there. Then we spoke before the Senate subcommittee hearing on mine health and safety, and the senators cried because I was just, you know, I wasn't polished like all the professional people, and I felt so lost in that big chair that day. And I tried not to cry, but it was so sensitive and hurt so deeply. Talk about number 9. It still hurts. It does. Because we went through too much.
Yeah.
And so then we pulled out the miners. Went to the mines and pulled them out that night before we went to Washington. And we told them the life they saved may be their own. So wait and don't go to work and tell them till they sign the bill into law. And so they went
home.
By
pulling them out, you mean you picketed?
And we stood by the road. We didn't go on the property. Uh-huh. And as they came to work, we asked them, you know, would you please not go to work tonight until we can get to Washington to ask the president to sign the bill into law.
Was that in
69. It was December, the last of December.
That was the year after number 9.
But I sent telegrams, and I asked if we could meet with the Secretary of Department of Interior. It was Wally J. Hickel at the time. He was former governor of Alaska. And so he replied and set up a date that we would go visit. And I delegated a few of we widows, got everything coordinated, and we went. And he told us what room to come to and what date to come, what day and everything, and the time. So we met with him, and we begged him, you know, to keep Mr. O'Leary, because he cared about the coal miners, and they kept him for a period of time then after that, because they would have put someone else in, then they wouldn't have cared about the miners' health and safety, you know. And so then after that he wrote a book, Who Owns America, and he put a chapter in about we widows.
Who wrote the book?
Wally J. Hickel. And he sent me the book and autographed it. But after I read the chapter, I wasn't pleased with it, because he wrote and said that we came unexpected and unannounced. So he was back in Alaska at that time, but I still wrote him and told him that that was wrong to exploit we widows and write a book and try to make money from it and lie about us, because we're honest. And I said, you know, that's wrong. I don't want the people to read those lies. And I wrote to the company, the publishers, told them I didn't want any more books published because, you know, I would sue them. And I meant it, too. So then my son was in the Air Force because he just retired 2 years ago, and he was stationed in Alaska. So lo and behold, I had an opportunity to go to Alaska. And I called Mr. Hickel and told him I was there. I thought for sure he'd invite me in to his office, but he didn't. But I told him, I said, I'm here in Alaska, and I want you to know that you wrote wrong about we widows. We never went anywhere that we weren't asked to go and invited.
What did he say?
So he apologized, and he said that he is sorry, and he said, you know, wrote me a letter, too. I still have it. Which all my letters and all the things I have is history. So I plan to give them to the West Virginia University Library.
That's nice.
And I had bushels of everything because I kept a journal of everything. And I had so much correspondence. I needed a secretary, but I was my own secretary. I kept a carbon copy of every letter that I ever wrote and dated for my proof because I learned the hard way.
Yeah.
I learned the hard way. Because we had a lot of nice people, but we had a lot of people that exploited us and tried to use us in every way that they could. And we got what the little boy, we got what part the chicken went over the fence last, nothing. And everybody else became rich. So they don't care, people don't in this society. Not all people, but a lot of them, I'll tell you. And I've learned the hard way. I'm nobody's fool, buddy. I've learned education that I've gotten from this tragedy. Nobody can ever take away from me my experiences. So I met people from all walks of life, from the bottom to the top. And I've seen them fall from the top back to the bottom. And my only compassion is that you greedy, selfish person, you had everything going for you, but the more you got, the more you wanted. And then you became so selfish that you were just in love with money. So I'm glad you fell. And I hope you never get to the top again.
Sounds like a lesson some of these coal companies could learn.
Well, right now, you know, they act like they're not going to give in an inch. Bobby Brown. He's president of Consolidation Coal Company. Of course, Continental Oil owns Consol. And, but I say, I'll try to write to Johnny Cash. I'll try to write to a lot of them. Come and help these coal miners. Help them go through this ordeal so they can stand up for what they believe in and for their human dignity. Not go back to work till they get what they want. See, they have about 4 months of coal on the top of the ground. So they're thinking they don't need coal, the companies. But let me tell you one thing. When that coal is expired and all used up, then they'll be crawling to us.
Won't they get an awful lot of coal from the strip mines out west? That are not the scab mines out west?
I don't know. Maybe some of that coal they won't be able to use, you know. There's certain kind of coal that different people buy, you know, for their industry.
The metallurgical coal and the other different
and then the bituminous coal. And then, of course, some mines, they use their own coal for steel. See, they're not commercial. But Consol is commercial. Commercial mine. And they own a lot of mines everywhere. I think they even own in Japan, too. And see, so we went to Pittsburgh. And I set up. We took some widows with us, and we weren't navigators, but I've learned to navigate pretty good since the tragedy. And we were afraid to go through the tubes and drive through them. We got lost and everything, but we got there. We went to the Consol main office, One Oliver Building, and we asked if we could see Mr. John Corcoran, and they said that he was out. He was in Japan. I said, well, we cannot go home until we see him because we are poor widows and we had a difficult time getting here to Pittsburgh because we'd never been, we've been places, but our husbands did the driving, you know, and we'd never driven on those big highways. Some of us, I hadn't, these big turnpikes. And so we said, we cannot go home. How about putting us up for the night? So they put us up in the William Penn Hotel. We had a suite that Jacqueline Kennedy and John Kennedy. So we slept in the bed that they had slept in. We were so nervous, you know. We scratched all night. We itched all night, just nerves. But before the night came, we went to the store. And we got us some signs. We got us some magic markers. And we didn't have our toothbrushes. We bought toothbrushes, one tube of toothpaste. We bought deodorant, shared it, and washed out our undies and everything that night and slept with sheets around us and because we didn't bring our night clothes with us. And They served us a good dinner. And then the next morning, they said, did we want served in dining room or where? I said, yes, by all means, in the dining room. So they want to know what we want. I said, well, some of us like oatmeal, some like cream of wheat, some of us like bacon, some of us like eggs, some of us like sausage, toast, and orange juice, all that, cornbread. I said, just send it all up. They did. So I told them, I said, kids, I call them kids, my widows, you know. I said, eat all this, because when you get out of this room, we're on our own. We'll be eating hamburgers. So, first of all, anyway, before we went to the hotel, we did get up to see the secretary. So she was so startled when she saw us. Her mouth flew wide open. That's when she told us he wasn't there, you know. He was out on a mission over in Japan. And so I told her, I said, well, we can't leave, you know, so until we see him, because we don't have that money to travel back and forth, and it's too difficult for us. So